on the Voice of America.
I'm VOA's Joe Ramsey with your worldwide news update. Two officials involved in talks said on Tuesday that Hamas has accepted a draft agreement for a ceasefire in the Gaza Strip and the release of dozens of hostages. AP correspondent Joe Fetterman has more from Jerusalem.
Israel and Hamas appear to be on the cusp of a ceasefire deal that would end over 15 months of war. Hamas officials say they've accepted a draft of the proposal. The Israelis say there still is no deal, but they're also voicing optimism as final details are being worked out. Qatar, the Mideast country that's been mediating the talks, say the sides have not been this close to an agreement in months. The proposal lays out a multi-stage process for ending a war that has killed over 46,000 Palestinians, 1,600 Israelis, and also caused widespread devastation in Gaza. The first stage calls for a gradual pullback of Israeli troops from most of Gaza over 6 weeks in exchange for the freedom of 33 hostages held by Hamas. Displaced Palestinians would also begin to go home, and aid would pour into Gaza. The sides also would quickly enter negotiations on a second phase meant to end the war altogether. That would mean a final pullout of remaining Israeli troops and the return of roughly 70 other hostages. Now, it remains unclear who will run Gaza in the long run and who is going to pay for the badly needed reconstruction, but negotiators are hoping that this initial phase will create the momentum to address these deeper issues.
AP correspondent Joe Fetterman. Officials have expressed optimism before, only for negotiations to stall while the warring sides blamed each other. But they now suggest they can conclude an agreement ahead of the January 20th inauguration of U.S. President-elect Donald Trump, whose Mideast envoy has joined the negotiations. This is VOA News. Southern California faces new wildfire warnings after flames the past week killed at least 24 people and destroyed thousands of homes. AP correspondent Julie Walker reports.
Firefighting officials in the Los Angeles area say they're ready for the Santa Ana winds to whip up and possibly spread flames. County Fire Chief Anthony Maroney.
The anticipated winds combined with low humidities and low fuel moistures will keep the fire threat in the L.A. region critical.
City Fire Chief Kristen Crowley says they're pre-positioning for any new wildfires.
We're carefully managing our operations to ensure that we can quickly respond to any new fires in addition to the increased call volume.
They continue to say until it's safe, many residents can't go back and check on homes. And L.A. County Sheriff Robert Luna warning residents to be ready for more evacuations so there's no repeat of last week.
A lot of the people that were rescued who waited till the last minute to leave the order or the evacuation order, many of them had significant burns on them.
And law enforcement officials say arrests continue for things like looting, trespass, curfew, and three people who tried to start small fires that were immediately extinguished were arrested on arson charges. I'm Julie Walker.
U.S. Special Counsel Jack Smith says in a report that his team stood up for the rule of law as it investigated President-elect Trump's efforts to overturn the results of the 2020 election. Smith says he stands behind his decision to bring criminal charges against Trump and believes the Republican would have been convicted had he not won the 2024 election. Trump says he's totally innocent. The White House announced on Tuesday that President Joe Biden has notified Congress of his intent to lift the U.S. designation of Cuba as a state sponsor of terrorism. AP correspondent Sagar Magani reports.
It's part of a deal facilitated by the Catholic Church to free political prisoners on the island. The U.S. will also ease some economic pressure on Cuba. President Obama had reversed the terror designation in 2016 during a period of thawing relations with Havana, which included a visit to the Cuban capital. President Biden's move to lift it again is likely to be reversed as early as next week once Trump takes office, with Secretary of State Marco Rubio, whose family left Cuba before Fidel Castro came to power. Sagar Magani, Washington.
That wraps up this update, but the world and news never stop. For additional updates, visit our website, voanews.com. I'm Joe Ramsey, VOA News.
latest from the Middle East.
U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken continued to express confidence in the latest proposal brokered by his country, Qatar, and Egypt.
Fires continue to ravage Los Angeles.
Now it is it's burning on almost 100 square kilometers.
And we go to heavy metal singing school.
These students are learning to growl.
Today is Wednesday, January 15th, and this is VOA's International Edition. Hello, I'm Steve Karish in Washington.
And I'm Alexis Strobe. We begin today with the Middle East. Hopes are still high for a Gaza ceasefire agreement. The Biden administration continues working with its partners to close the deal as it prepares to hand off to the Trump administration. Veronica Balderas-Iglesias has the details.
As Gaza endured more Israeli strikes Tuesday, a ceasefire deal appeared close. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken continued to express confidence in the latest proposal brokered by his country, Qatar, and Egypt.
If Hamas accepts, the deal is ready to be concluded and implemented.
$25 billion to Israel in the past year.
Pro-Palestinian demonstrators interrupted Blinken's remarks at the Atlantic Council as he recapped the Biden administration's approach to the Middle East crisis. He spoke about a post-conflict plan that he will hand off to the incoming Trump administration.
That would allow Israel to fully withdraw from Gaza, prevent Hamas from filling back in, and provide for Gaza's governance, security, and reconstruction.
In the near term, reaching a ceasefire deal would benefit all parties in the conflict, President Joe Biden said Monday.
The deal we have structured would free the hostages, halt the fighting, provide security to Israel, and allow us to significantly surge humanitarian assistance to the Palestinians.
Yahya Rashid was displaced from Gaza City. He welcomes the news of a potential truce.
We really hope it happens because our people are in desperate need to take a break from this big burden.
Shay Dixman's cousin was killed in Hamas captivity. He also favors a deal.
Time is of the essence. And we want to be very optimistic that within the few days, even hours, we can get to an agreement.
The latest ceasefire proposal is more specific than previous ones, says Jonathan Rui, director of foreign policy at the Jewish Institute for National Security of America. He was interviewed via Zoom.
Regarding the release of the hostages held by Hamas in Gaza, which specific hostages those would be, and specifically Israel's military posture in Gaza in exchange and in proportion to which hostages are released.
Rui is more optimistic about this ceasefire plan than the previous ones, but he is less optimistic about a permanent solution to the Palestinian-Israeli conflict, saying the parties are too far off to make the necessary hard agreements. Veronica Valderas-Iglesias, VOA News.
From Israel, we go now to neighboring Lebanon. There is a new president and prime minister that many Lebanese and Gulf and Arab countries hope will lead the war-torn nation out of its economic and political crisis. Lebanon's new president, Joseph Aoun, vows to tackle corruption and wants only the national army to hold weapons and protect Lebanon's borders. Moves likely to challenge the Shiite militia Hezbollah and Israel. Dale Gavlak reports.
Many Lebanese see both President Joseph Aoun and Prime Minister Nawaf Salam as being above the political infighting that has paralyzed Lebanon in recent times. Aoun headed Lebanon's national army for years, winning respect of citizens and foreign leaders, while Salam is a leading international judge who won parliament support. But as analyst Dania Khouli-Khati, president of the Research Center for Cooperation and Peacebuilding in Beirut, tells VOA, they face a mammoth task ahead, fixing the country's broken financial system and seeing the Hezbollah militia ultimately disarmed.
Joseph Aoun has a lot of challenges. He raised the bar very high, returning the money of a depositor, moving the arms. But for him to deliver on his promises, he needs support. unless Saudi and the UAE really kick the pressure on the Lebanese political structure, on the deputies, on the political party.
He won't be able to deliver. Hezbollah's political wing, along with other Shiite lawmakers, have been accused of stymieing necessary economic reforms and justice on issues such as the disastrous 2020 Beirut port blast. Senior Hezbollah lawmaker Mohammed Raad accused Aoun of trying to exclude the group from power in Lebanon by not allowing their choice of caretaker Prime Minister Najib Mikati stay in the post. Daniel Holly Hatib.
Hezbollah is weakened, but they still are there. They still have their political bloc. So they have to pressure everyone in the political scene to make sure he can do be formed. And forming means exposing all these guys because they are all involved in the corruption. Will they accept that? So it's very much uphill battle.
Needed reforms include rooting out corruption from Lebanon's state institutions, restructuring its public debt, and overhauling the banking system to unlock financial aid from the International Monetary Fund and Gulf Arabs. Rebuilding South Lebanon and parts of Beirut are priorities following the Israel-Hezbollah fighting that stopped with a fragile truce in November. Israel has warned the ceasefire could collapse later this month if Hezbollah does not withdraw beyond the Litani River in the south. Nicholas Harris of the Washington-based New Lines Institute says Hezbollah still has weapons that could be viewed by some Lebanese as useful for protecting their territory from Israeli aggression. But he says Hezbollah has to be disarmed and integrated into the national military, or Israeli attacks will continue.
President Aoun's entire portfolio is how do you secure Lebanon's borders and how do you return the sovereignty of the Lebanese state over all of territory, which has the implied task to put Hezbollah on a process of disarmament. But the Israeli interpretation of their ability to maneuver in Lebanon assumes that there will be an unsuccessful attempt by Lebanese armed forces to subordinate Hezbollah or contain it.
Harris says Prime Minister Salam will be tasked with moving Lebanon on a path to recovery, with getting its geopolitics squared away.
The Prime Minister is going to be judged on how effectively can he navigate geopolitical currents, which is still uncertain, in terms of the even rise of Turkish influence, how Iran reassesses approach, how Saudi Arabia and United Arab Emirates decide to respond to the fall of the Assad government in Syria.
According to Lebanon's sectarian power-sharing system, the president is a Maronite Christian and the prime minister must be a Sunni Muslim. The president selects him in consultation with the Shiite parliament speaker based on support by the lawmakers. Del Gaflak, VOA News.
And to California, a massive relief effort is underway in Los Angeles to help the tens of thousands of people who have lost their homes or have been evacuated from the paths of fires that have ravaged the area since last week. Jeannie Adulo reports from the Pasadena Convention Center, which is now an emergency shelter for evacuees.
Altadena resident Danielle Williams says she lost everything in the Eaton fire except the clothes she was wearing and her cat. Her sister's apartment is gone. Her father's house might still be standing. They don't know.
The whole backyard caught on fire. He's still fighting many fires. They're up there. There's SWAT. There's police people. Fortunately, his neighborhood is experiencing an extreme amount of looting, so that's another concern as well.
Everyone in this line lost their home. They are waiting for small cash assistance from the nonprofit California Fire Foundation. 19-year-old Hank Donovan says his whole block burned down.
I've grown up there since I was 7 years old. Grew up there, you know, with a group of like six or seven boys that were like, we're all around each other's ages, you know, we consider each other a family, and to just see the entire block that we grew up playing on, you know, hanging out. High school didn't tear us apart, college didn't tear us apart. Seems like the fire is the only thing that, you know, could disperse the block.
Firefighters helped Josh Erdman and Armin Sark recover their wedding rings after their house burned down.
They cut the wall open, removed the wall, and helped us open
open up the space to be able to find the rings. So we dug through the ashes and the rubble, and in about 30 or 40 minutes, we found both of our original rings.
Government agencies, private businesses, and nonprofit organizations are working to help evacuees who do not have extra clothes and important documents. The animal shelter Pasadena Humane is helping more than 350 pets whose owners could not take them to evacuation centers, says the nonprofit's spokesperson, Kevin McManus.
They had to have some place for their pets to go, or else they weren't going. So to keep everybody safe, we said, you know, bring your pets to us. We will care for them like they're our own, like the way you would want them to be. And that way you can take care of yourself. You don't have to worry about your pets in this incredibly trying time.
Los Feliz resident Richie Ramos donated pet supplies.
It feels good to be here. It feels good to see everyone be so kind and to donate and be generous and, of course, support and uplift each other while we can.
Emergency shelters and fire stations are overwhelmed with support, so authorities are asking people to stop dropping off food and perishable items and consider making a monetary donation instead. Jenya Julo, VOA News, Los Angeles.
Strong winds are continuing in Los Angeles, making firefighting more difficult. And as evacuations and destruction continues, there's now news of another fire, this one in Ventura County, west of Los Angeles. Back with the latest is Genia DeLue.
Death toll is at 24 people, and a lot of additional people are still unaccounted for. We're talking now about 12,000 structures destroyed, as authority reported. And, you know, I'm currently in the Palisades fire, and, you know, it's horrific what I'm seeing here. Now it's burning on almost 100 square kilometers, which is with a containment rate of 17%. Authorities have made a good progress on the second largest fire, is Eaton Fire, and now there we're looking about 35% contained.
And I understand there's a new fire to contend with west of Los Angeles in Ventura County. Can you tell us the latest from there?
That's correct. Yes, authorities have been promising us, they've been telling us that the forecast for winds are coming back and they're going to be dry and strong, which is in the first place was driving those fires that started a week ago. And yes, though I cannot feel much of wind here in Pacific Palisades, but Ventura County, San Gabriel Valley are experiencing winds up to 72 miles per hour. And that prompted last night, we all saw on the news, fairly small but pretty strong fire in Ventura County. And authorities have been working on it. I do not recall the containment rate, and I think it was a zero according to the press conference, but don't quote me on that. But, I mean, they are working.
Now, we understand that the Palisades fire, the Eaton fire, other fires in the area, other smaller fires, have burned up a tremendous amount of land. But Los Angeles is a very large city. Taking a look at things on the south side of Los Angeles, or more to the east, farther away from the fires, is life in L.A. going on as normal? Has it all stopped? Are children in school? What's life like?
I believe Los Angeles district school district allowed kids to come back to school. Either it was today or yesterday. So the life is coming back slowly to normal. And a lot of people, as you probably seeing on the news, a lot of people are in need, are displaced. You know, currently we have around 88,000 people under mandatory evacuation orders, which is down from what we saw last week. It was 150,000 people under mandatory evacuation. But still people are displaced. A lot of people are staying at the shelters and asking for, expecting for the assistance. And as you see probably also on the news, there's a huge answer, huge response from local authorities, from nonprofits, from private people. People want to help. In addition to that, I have to say that the authorities starting rolling off the power shutoffs in the area with high probability of winds. So people are talking about back to normal, not really, because people do not have, a lot of people do not have electricity, especially at night where there is the fires start occurring at night for some reason. So yeah, it is still pretty tough.
Genia DeLu, she covers Los Angeles for the Voice of America. Genia, thanks so much for your reporting today. Stay safe out there.
Thank you so much, Steve.
And here are some other stories we're following from around the world.
NATO Secretary Mark Rutte says the alliance is launching a new mission to protect undersea cables in the Baltic Sea. He said the mission will involve a range of assets, including frigates and maritime patrol aircraft, among others, and it will enhance vigilance in the Baltic. This comes as a string of incidents in the region has heightened concerns about possible Russian activities.
On Tuesday, the U.S. House of Representatives passed a bill supported by Republican President-elect Donald Trump to essentially ban transgender girls and women from competing in school sports by withholding federal funds from schools that do not comply. About 3% of American high school students identify as transgender, according to data released by the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Transgender rights have emerged as a political flashpoint in the United States over the past decade, with the focus turning to sports participation more recently. This week's bill proposes to amend the landmark 1972 Title IX legislation that outlawed sex-based discrimination. It would force schools to allow strict gender definitions based solely on a person's reproductive biology and genetics at birth.
In a report to Congress released early Tuesday, Special Counsel Jack Smith said his office had sufficient evidence to obtain and sustain a trial conviction of President-elect Donald Trump for efforts to overturn Trump's loss to Joe Biden in the 2020 election. Smith said Trump resorted to a series of criminal efforts to retain power after it became clear that he had lost and that legal ways to challenge the results had failed. Smith said Trump acted both in his private capacity as an election candidate as well as with the help of multiple co-conspirators, and that Trump tried to use the power and authority of the United States government in furtherance of his scheme. Trump has repeatedly denied wrongdoing and attacked the special counsel's work as politically motivated. He responded to the report's release early Tuesday with a post on his Truth Social platform calling Smith a lame-brain prosecutor.
VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Alexis Strobe.
And I'm Steve Karish. A visit to heavy metal singing school in a few moments, but now it's our look at U.S. politics and the change of administration in Washington.
Confirmation hearings for Donald Trump's cabinet picks begin this week and started with Trump's choice for Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth. The hearing was held Tuesday with senators questioning whether the former combat veteran and TV news show host is fit to lead the U.S. military. Senators grilled Hegseth for several hours on a range of topics such as troop recruitment, diversity initiatives, and women in combat roles. Hegseth said that if confirmed, there would be changes to the way the military operates.
The wokeness comes not from the uniform ranked senator, but from the political class. On day one, on January 20th, when President Trump is sworn in, he will issue a new set of lawful orders. And the leadership of our services will have an opportunity to follow those lawful orders or not. Those lawful orders will not be based on politics. They will be based on readiness, accountability, standards, and lethality. That is the process by which leaders will be judged.
Hegseth also faced questions about alleged sexual misconduct, alcohol abuse, financial mismanagement, and lack of management experience leading large organizations. He deflected questions, saying he was being targeted because he was allied with Donald Trump.
All they were out to do, Mr. Chairman, was to destroy me. And why do they want to destroy me? Because I'm a change agent and a threat to them, because Donald Trump was willing to choose me, to empower me, to bring the Defense Department back to what it really should be, which is warfighting.
Hegseth is a former Fox News host and one of the most controversial figures ever nominated to be Secretary of Defense. He has railed against diversity, equity, and inclusion initiatives in the military, even questioning whether the top U.S. general has the job because he's black. Before his nomination, Hegseth strongly opposed women in combat roles.
The dust is still settling in Syria following the ousting of the regime of Bashar al-Assad. It's widely seen as a big success for Turkey in its competition with Iran for regional influence. But analysts say Tehran still has cards to play in its intensifying rivalry with Ankara. Dorian Jones reports from Istanbul.
Observers often characterize relations between Iran and Turkey as a balance between competition and cooperation. But analysts say cooperation is giving way to an increasingly bitter rivalry as Ankara seeks to expand power in areas that Iran considers to be its sphere of influence and that are often protected by Iranian proxies. Bilgehan Alagöz is a professor of international relations at Istanbul's Marmara University.
From the beginning of the Arab uprisings, Iran started to perceive Turkey as an enemy for a couple of times indeed. So the Iran proxies also challenge Turkey's national interests. Iran was also another country that enabled PKK-YPG in both Iraq and Syria.
Analysts suggest Tehran could push back against Ankara by supporting the Kurdish militant groups through its Iranian-backed militias in the region. Observers say Turkey and Israel have common cause in containing Iran. Galia Lindenstrauss is a foreign policy specialist at the Institute for National Security Studies in Tel Aviv.
Israel and Turkey have a shared interest in stopping this expansionism of Iran. And you saw, in effect, that Israel and Turkey did not cooperate directly, but indirectly, Israel weakened Hezbollah, Turkey supported the rebel movement, and that's how Assad felt. That's the two explanations.
With President Recep Tayyip Erdogan looking to reset relations with the United States and U.S. President-elect Donald Trump vowing to take a tougher stance against Iran, analysts see an opportunity for collaboration. Mesut Jarshan, the Turkish presidential advisor, is a professor of international relations at Istanbul's Yeditepe University.
If Mr. Trump aimed to establish new solutions and methodologies with Iran, that time U.S. needs the Turkish assistance and cooperation. When you're looking big picture, Turkey and also U.S. has to be come together.
Observers point out that Iran and Turkey have managed rivalries for centuries, avoiding direct confrontation. But with Turkish-backed rebels ousting Tehran's ally Assad in Syria, those containment skills are likely to be tested. Dorian Jones, VOA News, Istanbul.
And finally, today in the Dutch city of Eindhoven, students at a school called the Metal Factory can earn a degree that includes mastering the art of growling. That's particularly useful if your career goal is to be a singer in a heavy metal band. Fiona Jones of Reuters takes us there.
These students are learning to growl. That as part of a three-year vocational study program in the Netherlands, specializing in metal music.
Pop music is nice. Sounds nice. It sounds clear. And we're kind of the dark side of it, if you will.
It is, says program coordinator Kevin Quilligan, one of a kind in Europe.
So we make our voice gritty and dirty and rough and dark to kind of reflect that other side of the spectrum.
I love you.
Marcella Bovio is a metal singer and instructor at the Metal Factory. She explains that learning to growl starts with a simple sigh.
So we want a very nice, unworthy sound. And then really keeping track on how much you squeeze in there so that it's not too much. You should be able to speak with a clear voice afterwards. You shouldn't hear it in your voice.
Student Kevin Schoenhagen is the lead singer of a band called Crave. It feels cathartic for him, he says, despite his parents presuming he was summoning a demon when he first practiced.
So, to me, it's one of the most purest forms of emotion, because when you're happy, you scream. When you're scared, you scream. When you're angry, you scream. When you're sad, you start screaming. It's really emotional, and I think it can help people a lot also with getting that emotion out. That's at least how it works for me.
That's Fiona Jones of Reuters reporting for us.
That'll wrap it up for today. This has been International Edition on the Voice of America. On behalf of everyone here at VOA, thank you for joining us.
For pictures, stories, videos, and more, follow VOA News on your favorite social media platform and online at voanews.com.
In Washington, I'm Alexis Strobe.
And I'm Steve Karish. Thanks for listening.